This week on the Boag World Show, I get to tell a horror story, and we ask whether one person can do it all. Welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul Boag. Joining me is Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. Same format as always.
Why? What do you say it like that for?
Well, we haven't had anyone else on the show for ages. Well, I suppose we have, but not at the same time.
Oh, I thought you meant my general introduction.
No, just about it's just me and you again.
So, because I'm going to change the general introduction, I've decided.
But you do that, and then you come back to it.
No, I think it's going to be important, because you know the top secret project that we're working on that isn't top secret at all, where we're talking about combining the Headscape and Boag World site.
Yeah.
I thought for the podcast to make more sense, it should say in the beginning of it something about Headscape. Okay. Do you see what I mean? Because otherwise it's not going to make sense within the context of the new site.
So the podcast for people who design, I can never remember what the words are.
BoagWorld.com, it's a podcast for all those who want to hire Headscape.
I was going to say, but I could do that bit, or people who want to hire Headscape.
Yeah, absolutely. Or I was thinking actually something more lines, you know, Headscape is brought to you, Boag World is brought to you by Headscape, and the latest web acronym, SAS. You know, like on Sesame Street, it was brought to you by a letter and a number.
Oh, we could just do that anyway. Can't we just do a letter and a number?
That'd be cool. Well, no, because it doesn't mention Headscape. But we could do Headscape and a pointless web phrase. It's brought to you by Ajax. I mean, what the hell is Ajax?
Well, it's a place in Holland, isn't it?
Oh, it's a cleaning fluid. Or it's brought to you by responsive design. I mean, what does that actually mean to a real human being? Or it's brought to you by heuristic testing. Or, yes. I mean, it goes on. You see, I'm seriously considering doing this now. I was just joking, but actually I think this would be quite funny. I reckon you could go on for months with stupid phrases that web designers make up.
Okay, sold.
I'm now ranting, aren't I?
Yeah, I'd kind of switched off a little bit there.
So you're disappointed we don't have anyone else on the show, are you? Well, we have our interviews.
No, yeah, then I realised that, of course, there is someone else on the show, but not at the same time. It's just because Lee's here.
Lee's in the office.
Yeah, and it made me thought, and then I thought, well, no, it's too complicated because Paul's on the other end of her phone, and then Lee wouldn't be able to hear you, and it was like, oh, there you go.
My life at the moment is just so complicated. I'm all over the place.
You are.
Literally, and mentally, probably. So, this week I'm in Edinburgh briefly, St. Andrews, London, then immediately next week, Belgium. Oh, just such a jet setter.
You are, aren't you? I think you might have had just a smidge of complaining in your tone there.
Well, yes. I'm not complaining about the four trips to America, including Chicago, which would be really nice if that happens.
Wouldn't it? Just.
And then Austin. And where else am I going? Vegas. And there was somewhere of Charlotte. I'm not quite as excited about Charlotte, although the conference looks amazing. It's called the Blend Conference. Blend Conf. It's worth looking up, actually. Link in the show notes to that, because it's got a really good lineup and a lot of speakers. I'm amazed how many speakers they have. I thought it was, because it's just a one-day conference. It must be like a 20 billion track conference. I'm very confused by the whole thing.
Oh, they're really annoying, the ones that have 12 tracks, like South by Southwest or whatever. Well,
I'm not expecting anybody to come to mine because the lineup is so stellar that it's like, why would you want to do that when you could go and listen to Zeldman or Sarah Parmenter or Greg Hoy or any of these other amazing people? So there we go.
So are you up? Are you literally up against Zeldman?
I've no idea. Knowing my luck, I will be.
Right, carry on talking. I'm looking it up now.
What, BlendConf?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a code I'm supposed to give out to give people a discount, but I haven't been given the code yet. But I've got more important, you know, I've got like, I'm talking about that one, but I've got miles, you know, I've got future insights coming up in Vegas first and all these kinds of things. So I'm not in any way complaining. Well, I am.
You are a bit.
I am a bit. But only in a good way. My TripIt, I'm getting good value out of TripIt Pro. Let's put it like that. If you do travel a lot, check out TripIt.com. It's turning out to a big advert, this. You know, people ought to pay for us to do this, like they do on other shows. We ought to get sponsors on again, I've decided. TripIt, you have to sponsor me.
Paul, you don't appear to be on the website.
What do you mean I'm not on the website?
You're not on the website. Unless I'm looking at last year's conference or something.
Yeah, you are. You're looking at last year's. But look how many speakers were on last year.
Yeah, lots. There's kind of a three-way thing, by the looks of it. A three-track conference.
It's a smorgasbord of speakers. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? Three... Who am I going to be up against? This is terrifying. I don't like multi-channel conferences for that exact reason.
BlendConf 2014. Come on, you can do it.
Anyway.
Yeah, carry on.
So, yes, busy, busy, busy. What are you doing with your life? Are you doing anything?
Me?
Yeah, you're sitting at home working. That's the way I like it. I go jet-setting around the world. Everyone else stays at home.
Oh, I see what you mean. Always, Paul. We are just at your beck and call.
Yeah. Well, you are coming to Chicago if that comes off.
Yes, that's a big if.
I've decided. We're tendering for something, therefore we have won it.
Exactly.
That's how the world works, in my view. Now, I notice we won a new client. Am I allowed to say who that new client is?
Well, it's not official yet.
It's not official, so I won't say yet. But I noticed they're not UK-based.
No, they're not.
Does that mean a jolly somewhere?
No.
Oh.
No, it doesn't, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, that's shit, then. don't want to work for them anymore. I was quite excited about that one.
They're a sort of relatively poor charity, and they want to spend every buck of theirs on as much kind of functionality and design hours as they can possibly get out of it. So paying for us to fly around the world is not something they want to be doing for their limited budget.
Damn.
Which is fair enough.
I mean, that's very sensible of them, but yes. Damn. Especially as they're in Mexico. I quite like the answer.
They're not in Mexico. They're all over the place.
Yeah, they're Mexico City. I'm looking at their website right now.
I think that if they have anything close to a head office, it's in Canada.
Yeah, I'm not as fussed about Canada. They're in Cape Town as well. I'd quite like to go to that. That's the only reason. If you want to work with Headscape... You have to have a fancy location. We're not interested in you if you're UK-based.
Of course not.
No, not the slightest. How come all our clients are in Scotland, Marcus? I'm going to Scotland this week. I'm fed up with going to Scotland. Although I am going to St Andrews, which is very nice.
Scotland is not as bad to get to as the north of England. Nowhere near. If you had clients in Manchester or somewhere like that, it's much more of a pain in the bum to get to, I think.
Yeah, you are true.
Well, not me. St Andrews less so, because you've got to go and jump in a car. But it's jumping in a car, driving through lots of lovely countryside, so it's not the end of the world.
Which is a bonus. But I do, before that, it's my fault. I've decided it's not. It's not St Andrews' fault for being in the wrong place in the UK. I'll forgive them for that. They have been there 600 years and we haven't. But no, it's living in Dorset, isn't it? It's like 2-hour drive to Heathrow. If I can't fly from Southampton, it's a 2-hour drive to Heathrow. Mm-hmm. And then it's a big airport, so you have to leave ample time. And then you fly up to Edinburgh. I'm going to spend the whole of Monday just travelling.
But you do get to go in the pods when you go to Heathrow.
I don't this time. The pods were sold out.
Yeah, they often are these days.
There we go. Or was that the next trip? Oh, I don't know. All these trips blur together. I've no idea what I'm doing.
I'm a bit disappointed with Blend Conference not being able to show me what the schedule is.
Well, there is a sneak peek on Lanyard, apparently.
Ah, right.
But it doesn't have the schedule, it just has the speakers. You just want to know who I'm up against, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely, there's no other reason I want to. I'm looking for this, just so I can just gloat.
It's going to be someone really talented. Probably talented and young, which is the worst combination.
And good looking.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's like, I don't mind going up against Zeldin, because, you know, Zeldman, because he's, you know, he's older, he's got the experience and maturity, he's butt ugly like I am. So that's kind of all right. You know, I don't mind being beaten by Zeldman, but it's being beaten by some kind of young upstart that is way more talented than I am.
Yeah, much cleverer and much more handsomer.
Yes, it's just unacceptable. Anyway, right, what are we talking about on this week's show?
You asked me what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I'm going to meet you at the .NET Awards on Friday.
Yeah.
Where we're going to clap someone else's podcast for winning, probably.
As long as it's not Andy Clark's podcast, I'm fine.
What will we do if it is? Just stand up and walk out.
I'm going to turn the table over. I said this on a previous podcast. I think I might get in trouble if I do that.
No, just walk out.
Yeah.
You know, thunder in your eyes.
Or
maybe throw something on the floor.
Take the jug of water on the table and throw it at him. Shave his beard off. Oh, no, you'd have to stay still for that. That's probably maybe not a good idea.
So, yeah, I'm doing that. And other than that, Paul, no, I'm doing just lots of work to pay for all your trips.
Excellent. Hang on a minute. Surely my clients pay for the trips.
Well, I got away with it for a second there.
No, well, you do have to get them all signed up.
This is true.
Well, some of them.
Yes.
Some of them are conferences and I have to deal with them. I need a secretary.
You do. So do I.
It's disgraceful, really.
Yes. We being high-flying businessmen.
Because we have an office administrator, but Chris hogs her.
Yes, this is true. I call her office manager, Paul.
Oh, is it manager?
And without her, we would all be much worse off.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not in any way. No, well, absolutely. Oh, we would be completely stuffed without Liz.
Yes.
But my point is that she's not a secretary that does my bidding.
Quite. Well, no, definitely not that.
She would crush me under her foot. Yeah, so, yes, secretary. I need one. Marcus, do you want to be my secretary?
No, I don't, Paul.
No?
No.
I find that strange. No, what I could do with is an intern. They really are. You really can abuse them.
An intern, basically, who would be your secretary or person who brought you drinks.
Did whatever the hell I wanted. I could get them to dance for my amusement.
I think it's probably time to move on from this conversation. Yes.
I did try and say what was on this week's show.
Yes, I know. Sorry, I interrupted you.
You didn't give me a chance.
Go on then, go on.
So, we have got two things on the show as normal. The featured person of the week and the featured project. The featured person, I don't know how to say his second name. How do you say his second name, Marcus?
Dalgano.
So it's Jez Dalgano, who works just down the road from me, actually, in a company called Oak Telecom. Mm. And it's a really interesting interview because he's all by his lonesome. He is the only web person in his company. If I was in his situation, I would want to kill myself. But he seems to thrive in it. So it's a really interesting interview. He talks a lot of really good sense, and there's some good little topics and conversations that come out of that. So that's coming up first. Then after that, we're looking at a brilliant website called popcornhorror.com, which I picked purely because of the name, really, if I'm honest. But that's quite an interesting little subject because it's about a project that went horribly wrong. So that's always interesting as well. So we'll talk about those two in the show, but we'll start off with Jez's interview right now. Okay, so joining myself and Marcus today is Jez Delgano. Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
Marcus is smiling because I had to say your surname and I didn't want to get it wrong.
Indeed, didn't quite get it right though, did it?
Did it not sound smooth?
It wasn't bad.
Yeah, close.
I've had a lot worse.
Yeah, well, you can imagine my name with Boag, you know.
I was going to say, I don't know which is more difficult.
I'm difficult in so many ways. Yes. So, it's really great of you to come on the show. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you indeed.
It's been an absolute pleasure for us as well to talk to all these different people, and it's been fascinating. We're really enjoying it. So, can you start by telling us a little bit about who you are, what your website is, what you get up to?
My name is Jez Delgano. I am the web developer and kind of the UX guy for a telecommunications software company based in Poole in Dorset. I've worked for this company now for, it will be 10 years in July. I came here straight from university. Originally hired as an internal software tester, I sort of graduated to the heady leagues of being a web developer about a year later when the company decided it wanted to move design and development of its main corporate website in-house rather than being subcontracted out to a company as it was at the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I pretty much managed that website ever since. That includes all design and development work, content creation, SEO, conversion optimization, paid advertising, so on and so forth. That website has been iterated on probably at least 4 or 5 times in the time that I've been here. And has proved to be quite successful. That's what the company wants it to do. It was redesigned last, I think, in 2012. So it's probably not a million miles off getting another one sometime soon.
Are you allowed to tell us what it is?
The company?
Yeah.
The company's Oak Telecom.
Oak Telecom.
Yeah, so have a look.
Oak's been going since about 1985.
Oh, right, blimey.
And they create mostly software for all telecoms-related stuff. So whenever you phone someone and they say this call may be recorded, that's the kind of software and systems that we design.
I see. So two comments about that. One is you're about 20 minutes down the road from me, so we should hook up and have coffee sometime.
We should indeed.
Paul's a big coffee fan.
Yes, I don't drink coffee. that's a fundamental flaw with that particular plan, or get lunch or something. And two, you've been working on one website for 10 years. Why do you not want to kill yourself?
That's a good question. I think the fact that it's been iterated on several times is probably the answer.
Right. Yeah.
So, I'm responsible for several other web-based properties that the company has, some internal process systems, some sort of technical issue tracking systems that we've designed and produced over the years. Mm. And I also now do the UX work on the company's main line of products. So they keep me quite busy without simply being tied to the one website all the time.
Okay. Oh, but so there is a variety there then.
There is. And for me personally, this single website has been a kind of very interesting case study, if you will, for me starting off in a career to take this website from where it was to where it is today over the course of many iterations. It gives me a chance to keep not addressing the same problem, but addressing new problems, you know, and finding new ways to solve them with the same website.
Yeah.
It's not as boring as it sounds.
He said, stamping his foot.
Yes. Let me guess, you do some freelance work in the evenings too?
I do.
Yes, of course you do. Good man. I think that's quite important when you're working on one website for a long length of time, that you can experiment with other stuff outside of work as well. And, you know, because you're not going to be able to do everything on that one website, are you?
No, exactly. You know, and it's a decent-sized company, so, you know, I get a lot of creative freedom on that website, but there's always things that I might want to try that I can't necessarily do. So the fact that I have a little freelance business going gives me the opportunity to work on various other websites. It also gives me an opportunity to tackle the working relationship from a different side. So, obviously, here I'm an internal web developer, so I'm part of an internal team.
Yeah.
So my client is the stakeholders in the business, but when I do the freelance stuff, then I'm a subcontractor. And I, you know, obviously have to approach things slightly differently.
I mean, it's you know, I think whichever side of the fence you're on, there's something to be learnt from the other side. You know, I actually quite, I was saying this on an interview earlier today that I was recording, but that I actually quite miss working on one website for a prolonged length of time. You know, so yeah. I think there's, you know,
you'd just moan about it if you did, though.
I'll moan about whatever I do, Marcus. You know that. Okay, so I mean, you've been working on this website for a long time. So, what do you feel like the biggest challenges that you've had to face while doing it?
I would say over the years, probably the single biggest reoccurring challenge is that of content creation. it's the thing that I kind of keep coming back to over and over again. It's always the part where, not where the process breaks down, but where sometimes the process grounds to a bit of a halt.
Carry on.
I was just going to say, I mean, particularly working on the same website, you know, you can get into the habit of just kind of recycling the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And when the company's, you know, maybe its goals change or its expectations from its website changes, then, you know, as you guys know, simply changing the design of something isn't necessarily conducive to making any particular, you know, improvements. You know, if you're not tackling the content issue,
content first, yeah,
exactly, and what you're actually providing to the end user. I don't, you know, 10 years of working on the same website has told me that a lot of people don't really care too much about your website.
it's
fine to be the sort of unfortunate truth that they can either accomplish their goal on your site or they can't, and if they can't, then nothing else is particularly relevant to them.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you responsible for creating the content, or are you trying to extract it from other people?
I think I'm a sort of facilitator insofar as it's not really my job to write the copy. It can be sometimes. It can be part and parcel of the design work. But the kind of meat of it, which is obviously about our products and about the services that we offer, we try to make, you know, more relevant people responsible for, but that's not always terribly easy. And you can find, you know, if you go to people and say, you know, we're going to do a piece about, I don't know, the support services that we offer, for example, you might get back, you know, a badly written sentence, or you might get back a 20-page Word document.
Right.
You know, none of which is necessarily particularly appropriate for the audience and the position that the audience is going to be in at the time when they're reading that content.
So do you tend to rewrite a lot of the stuff that you get from internal stakeholders?
To a degree, quite often. Sometimes it's, I shouldn't say it, but sometimes it's to make it fit in with the design, which isn't as terrible as it sounds.
No,
it's... I'm not necessarily changing the content. I'm not changing, you know, the nature of what it says. I'm not changing its message, but I might tweak it just so that it kind of fits in a little bit better.
And I think that's perfectly acceptable. I mean, that's proper art direction when design and content work together in harmony. I mean, that's the way it should be. And I mean, I'm clicking around your site now, which I, no doubt, you know, horrifies you because it's always horrible when people look at your work. And it, you know, it has got a very art direction feel to it. You haven't got just big chunks of text, you know, poured into a template. You know, it is very much kind of where the design and the content work hand in hand. So that's great. I mean, that's the way it should be, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, this version is now, like I said, it's coming up to a couple of years old. It was launched in the summer of 2012, and it was a move to really push the website beyond what it had been previously. And we did a large part of that was reworking a lot of that content, really trying to imagine the audience that we've got. So a lot of our content historically just tends to be written very much from our point of view. It's what we want to say about things. Mm. And anyone who produces anything, doesn't matter if you build cars or you build washing machines, what you've got to say about it is probably a lot more extensive and a lot more boring than anyone really wants to know about it.
Yeah, quite.
I'd like to turn that into a poster. That is just such a great phrase. Yeah. I love it.
There was quite a lot of effort to take a lot of this, you know, pretty wordy, pretty technical stuff and really try and distill it down into, you know, the core that anyone's going to be looking for. Enough to get people interested, not so much as to bore the pants off people.
Yes, that's a fine line to walk, isn't it?
Yeah, very.
Well, I think a lot of people we work with have that goal, and they say at the start of projects, we're going to cut 90% of the content out because we know it's boring, we know it's just us preaching and nobody's interested, but they can't do it. No. They can probably cut it by half, maybe, but, you know, I'm still saying this is boring stuff that nobody wants to read. Oh, but one person might.
Yes.
So that edge case, you know,
that
thinking.
Session with edge cases is always, somebody might find it useful. Well, yeah, but for every person that finds it useful, 10 people are going to find it in their way.
Yes. I think there comes a point. People spend such a long time speculating. There comes a point where, really, you're going to have to find me that person. Do anything about it.
I love that as well. Yes, find me the edge case. God, you're full of one-liners that are completely convincing me. So you mentioned that at some stage, you know, you feel like it's coming up ready for another redesign. Is that something you do? I mean, it sounds like everything falls on your shoulders. Do you do the redesign, or do you get someone in from the outside? How does it work?
It's all done in-house. It's principally done by me. I work with one of the primary stakeholders, who's kind of our technical CEO here, who generally drives a lot of this work. And I work with our internal marketing team. I'll do all of the physical kind of development work. The only stuff I don't do tends to be branding, design work to do with our products, because that's done by an external contractor.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But of the kind of graphic design for the website and all that stuff, then I will do. We don't kind of do, I guess, what you'd call sort of mandated redesigns. We don't kind of redesign something simply because it's 2 years old.
Yeah.
We either kind of have a solid set of reasons to do it or not. At the moment, we're going through a kind of branding update of our core product line, so that's likely to mean that we go in and do a load of work just to bring the website up to kind of fit in with that, and we might take that opportunity to change a few bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to come back later in one of your future questions, but you'll notice that the website is not in any way, shape or form responsive.
Yeah, I wonder whether you were going to mention that.
Yeah, and I think that's the, you know, that's the kind of, it was discussed 2 years ago and that stuff was very much kind of new. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of noise about it, but we kind of looked at the stats. I did a workup using one of the Foundation, the responsive sort of prototyping framework from Zurb, did a kind of prototype with that to prove that we could do it. But I think it was decided at the time that the ROI on it was not really, it wasn't really justified. Mm-hmm. But it was something that we might return to later on. And I think it's just kind of inevitable at this point that we're going to want to do that. And I don't fancy trying to retrofit responsiveness onto that website particularly.
Okay, so you would fundamentally build it from scratch, would you?
I think we'd kind of need to. You know, it was never designed. Don't get me wrong. I think I could make it work. I'm pretty sure I could. You know, I could put a flexible grid in there, and I could do this, that, and the other, and I could kind of wrangle it into some sort of, you know, reasonable state. But I think that's a mistake. I think it kind of needs to be rethought. In mm-hmm. those terms, it needs to be. It was designed to be a desktop website, you know, and maybe we need to start at the other end. We need to start, you know, with very much a mobile view, and build it up from there. Because I don't really much fancy doing it the other way around. Because I think that just becomes a question of shoving around content until it kind of looks all right, you know, on a little screen. And that doesn't seem like a particularly modern approach, and I can't imagine that working out the best for anyone concerned.
No, and I think eventually it could come back and bite you when some new device comes along. Or,
exactly.
You know,
that's the other thing. I really, really, really do not want to design things or build things on the basis of any specific device.
Yeah.
Because I can't ever see that long-term working. I really don't want to, not to the point where I'll test it on devices, but I'm not kind of seeing some of these device labs where they've got 500 different devices. I almost can't ultimately see the point.
Mm. Yeah, no, I fully accept that. I think that's a very sensible approach. So when you go through this making the site responsive, do you think that the look and feel of the site will change radically, or are you going to keep fundamentally the same look?
I don't think it'll change radically. There's no reason for it to. I don't think it has to change radically. Mm. I think some of the responsive sites are getting maybe slightly formulaic. They kind of remind me of your kind of atypical WordPress websites, where you can smell it a mile off the moment you get on it.
Yeah.
Before you right click and view source, you know you're looking at a WordPress website. The responsive ones are a little bit like that, just because I think there are so many technical challenges to kind of overcome that, you know, people recycle a lot of the same solutions to the same problems, not unreasonably. I'd like to think that we can do it slightly more bespokely so that it kind of suits us more, which is something this company is quite good at doing. We always like to do things, you know, not particularly off the shelf, but we like to do it, you know, in-house, and we like to do it in a way that works for us. So I think we can kind of drive it from that point of view. The look and feel that we've got now, I think we'll kind of keep, but we'll probably evolve a little bit. Like I said, we've got some new branding coming in that we'll want to bring in. But the basic kind of messaging, the basic kind of approach, the way the site is kind of divided up almost on a sort of per department basis, I think we'll probably stay. So I don't see any need to kind of radically change it. I don't want to. It's a little bit like with shops. You don't, you know, if Tesco kind of fundamentally changed the way it looked all the time, it would be kind of jarring and confusion and confusing.
Yeah.
It needs to be some, I don't think a lot of companies, a lot of sites are not very good at maintaining some semblance of consistency along the line. You know, if you use the Internet Archive, you go back, you look at their site over years, and it's just, it's totally indistinguishable each time they redesign it.
Yeah.
And unless you're solving some sort of problem, I don't think there's a good reason for doing that.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is absolutely spot on, although I am sitting here feeling slightly hypocritical saying I couldn't agree more, because we're just about to do quite a radical redesign of Netscape and Voag World.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, it is radical, but it's toning it down a lot. So from that point of view, I think it's just kind of growing it up. And if you took away the, you know, the imagery from the current site, they're not a million miles apart, he says.
I think that is an enormous stretch, Marcus.
Yeah. So we're finally getting the design I want.
Yes, actually.
Basically.
Yes.
So.
Well, that's no bad thing. I think at the end of the day, if you've gone through a process and you've sat down and you've kind of worked something out and you've arrived at the design that you think it needs to be, that's very different to, I'm a bit bored of our website, I'm going to make it blue.
Yeah. You know,
which I think is kind of the problem a lot of people have. And at the end of the day, designers like to design and developers like to develop, and that tends to lend itself to doing a lot of redesigns of websites, because websites are quite quick and easy to recycle all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and you get bored of doing it. I get bored of the website I'm working on about a third of the way through the project. Well, and if you're not very, very disciplined, you're redesigning it several times before you ever even build the thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that there's anything wrong with it, you're just kind of bored of looking at the same thing all the time.
Yeah. I think, I mean, in our case as well, I mean, as a design agency, I think there's also a little bit of an expectation to kind of throw it out and start again to show new stuff.
Well, exactly. You know, you feel under pressure that, you know, you're going to be judged, you know, more than anyone else on the sort of perceived quality of your website. Mm. And if it just stays the same all the time, then, you know, I suppose you feel the need to reflect not necessarily current trends, but current best practices, current thinking.
Absolutely.
You know, so that people know, because otherwise how, you know, that's one of the problems with, I think, for a company selecting other companies, you know, to do this work for them, is how you judge them in terms of, you know, what they can bring to the table, what their quality is, in an industry that doesn't kind of have quality regulation in that sense.
I was going to ask you about that in terms of working with outside contractors, but it doesn't sound like you actually do that, you know, that you do everything in-house.
We have done in the past. We do for very certain things. The site, when I took it over, was built, designed by an external contractor who we still use today, but they are primarily a print graphic design company, and they have our print marketing stuff now. But like so many, you know, companies of that nature, they also do web design and development. Okay. And I think when I came in, I came off the back of a degree course where I'd done quite a lot of web stuff. And I was kind of pitching a few ideas around, and I think they kind of got it into their head that they could probably bring the website in-house. And I think at the time it was managed in-house by up to about 6 people, just because some issues that they had with the kind of implementation of it, which was something they were looking to change. So whilst I don't think the company was having by any means a particularly negative experience of using subcontractors, they just felt they would have more control if they took it in-house, which I think would say ultimately they got. But like I say, we still use that company now. I think it's more a case of, you know, the right company for the right job. As a software development company, we have dabbled, let's say, with using external companies to fill in the occasional hole that we might have in resourcing. I don't think that's always been hugely successful. I think we're trying to communicate what are ultimately pretty complex you know, ideas and processes, to be doing that, you know, to teams off-site has always proved difficult. Even when we've had employees who don't work in our main office in Poole, but work, you know, somewhere else in the country, for example, you know, that's difficult.
Mm.
So the company, I think, has kind of over the years, having experimented with this, that stuff, pretty much decided that, at least for the time being, kind of doing it all in-house tends to work out better.
I mean, the big challenge for you must be, as someone, it sounds like you are the web guy within that company.
Yeah, so, pretty much.
So how do you stay up to date with stuff?
I think for me, that's always been a particular challenge. I think I'm quite lucky in so far as the company that I work for, Oak Telecom, they've always afforded me a lot of creative freedom, and they've never really hamstrung me, technologically speaking. If there's, you know, if I've got an idea or a concept, or I read about something online, like the responsive web design, for example, and I want to go off and I want to prototype something and throw something together and say, look, you know, I think we could do this better by incorporating some of these things, they're totally happy for me to do that. You know, there's no kind of, I'm not locked down in terms of, you can't use this, you can't use that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got friends, you know, who I went to uni with, for example, who work for companies where they're not allowed to use open source.
Right.
You know, nothing open source can be used, you know, so I don't have any of those kind of constraints. And that, I think, is one of the areas where working on the same website over the years has been a really interesting opportunity, because with each iteration, it's kind of brought in new ways of doing things. It might have, you know, one design might have brought in HTML5, one design might bring in responsive, you know, each time there's kind of a, I think it's not feasible for one person to be 100% capable 100% of the time.
No, obviously not.
So I think I follow quite a few, as I'm sure a lot of people do, follow, including yourself, quite a lot of, you know, well-known industry people on Twitter. And there's often a lot of talk about specific areas of web design at any given time. It might be responsive, sometimes it's typography, and there'll be an awful lot of chatter amongst these different things, and an awful lot of kind of conjecture, and maybe we should do this, and here's this framework, and here's that, and sometimes you can kind of sit there and think, I could literally spend my entire time worrying about kerning, which, with the best will in the world, you know, I can't do, you know, regardless of how, you know, kind of convincing people are about it, or, you know, how shocked and horrified they are by some dodgy kerning on some website, that's fine, but we have to look at a bigger picture.
Yeah.
You know, particularly when you're, you know, working for the company in question, it's not, I can be pretty idealistic at the start of a project, and sometimes I am, but I've tried over the years to reduce it down to a handful of things each time that I want to focus on, and maybe the next time I do an update, typography might be one of those things that I choose to focus on. But trying to kind of do everything.
Yeah, you have to pick your battles.
Yeah, it just kind of doesn't work. And as you go along, it's one of the, you know, doing the freelance work helps quite a lot, because I'm working on more websites, so I can try more things. And eventually, you know, all these different bits and bobs might, you know, kind of culminate in one perfect website, but I doubt it.
No, I don't think there's such a thing as one perfect website, but there you go.
No, we'll shoot for it, but I don't think it exists.
So one last question for you before we move on, which is, over the time since, you know, leaving your degree course and working at Oak, what's the one big thing that you've learnt? That's quite a difficult question, I know.
Well, there'd be a few. I think... okay, I've got two.
Okay, that's good. Right.
The first one is kind of what I was just talking about, which is probably, like, if I was going to give someone a piece of advice, I'd say don't try and build the perfect website.
Yeah.
It doesn't really exist. I think a lot of people these days worry quite a lot about working on the web, because one of the beautiful things about being a web developer, kind of used to be, or even a web designer, kind of used to be that the kind of barrier for entry was very, very low. It's not this kind of hugely daunting... prospect to get into. It is something you can kind of tinker with at home and kind of get into, which is kind of how I started back in, you know, maybe the late 90s. Whereas, you know, software development is quite this sort of formal, big, complex thing that a lot of people don't necessarily want to go near, because it's not the sort of thing you dip a toe into. Whereas web development, you know, you could always get into it, you know, quite simply. But I think over time it's becoming increasingly complex, or at least it seems increasingly complex.
Yeah.
You know, people aren't just talking about a bit of HTML anymore. They're not even necessarily talking about a bit of HTML, a bit of CSS, and a bit of JavaScript. Now there's a lot more stuff being banded around. It might be Node.js. It might be responsive web design. It might be this. It might be that. To the kind of to anyone kind of looking in, it's starting to look pretty complicated to get into. And yes, I can just build a website, but that's kind of not enough anymore. It's got to do more. It's not, we're not creating online brochures anymore. There's a certain amount of expectations. Companies like Oak, you know, they have an expected ROI. They've got things they're trying to achieve, and if it's not doing those things, you know, that's going to be an issue.
Yeah.
So, you know, massively fretting about your typography is great when you don't really have anything else to worry about. You know, when you've got a high-performing website, by all means, go off and do those things. But don't spend all of your kind of idealistic design time fretting about those details that ultimately can be tweaked and changed as you go along. You have to get the fundamental core of what you're designing and what you're developing right so that you'll then have the time, you'll have the luxury of time to go and worry about those things later on.
Yeah. I mean, that's so true.
If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the number of times that we encounter a client that says, yes, well, we must have personalization on our website. Mm. And you go, hang on a minute, you don't have calls to action that work.
Yeah. No, you know, exactly.
Don't worry about these kinds of details when you haven't done, you know, dealt with the fundamentals.
Yeah, and I should say for clarification, I sound like I'm ragging on typography. I'm really not.
No.
It's just the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The other thing is, and I think this is kind of contentious, and I've, having followed you for a few years, I know you've periodically had some fairly fruity discussions with people about this,
okay.
And that's SEO as a subject. The biggest thing I did with the current iteration of Oak Telecom's website is I basically didn't do anything about SEO.
Okay.
I didn't. That is to say that I didn't. There were no specific items of work that I did for SEO reasons.
Right.
Okay.
And how did that work out for you?
It's from an SEO point of view, from a ranking point of view, it's the most successful website they've ever had.
Okay.
I should basically quantify it and say it's not that I completely ignored SEO. It's that having spent years working on this website, years reading lots of articles and stuff online, watched a million and one Google map cuts, web spam team, YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
My conclusion is that all Google really wants you to do is build a decent website that mm-hmm. has some decent content for your intended audience.
Sure.
And if you do that, you'll kind of naturally have a good chunk of the sort of optimization that you want.
Yeah.
At the point of which you're doing something for no other reason than to try and boost your rankings, you probably shouldn't be. It's probably time that would be better spent making your content better, slightly improving the way your navigation works, doing something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think any search engine out there wants you to be investing vast amounts of time trying to make your website more appealing to them.
I think, to be honest, it ties in with the first comment that you made, the first lesson you learned, which is that absolutely, you know, you can do all of these little tweaks and improvements that improve your SEO, but only after you've got the basics in place.
Yes.
You know, once you've created good content, once you've created an easy to navigate site, an accessible site, all of those kinds of things, then you can worry about adding the, you know, the little tweaks that help Google out the extra mile, so to speak.
Yeah, but a lot of them, you see, come under kind of common sense best practice.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's, you know, it's not really, I think there's still a kind of subset of organizations that still want to sell you that almost kind of cloak and dagger notion of SEO, you know, the kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink, let's meet in a darkened car park to discuss it further. You know, and it's not like that anymore. It shouldn't be like that. And companies still kind of peddling that view of it. You know, you pay. One of the clients I work with, their monthly SEO budget is about £15,000.
Wow.
Actually, I think I'm wrong. I think their SEO conversion optimization budget is about 30 grand a month.
Crikey.
And having looked through their website, there's probably two dozen, if not more, things. I could sit there and say, well, you could change that, you could change that, you could change that. And these are all just straightforward, common sense, best practice things. The things that Google actually tells you you ought to be doing, which are not things, you know, for Google, it's things to benefit your audience.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't need to be spending £15,000-£30,000 a month to do those things. You know, they might spend £8,000 on a website and then £30,000 a month compensating for the fact it wasn't built properly in the first place.
I mean, that's the thing that the SEO community are really suffering from at the moment, and I think they would accept that, which is that, you know, that there are a lot of people that are peddling crap, you know. And I think, to be honest, the web design community suffers from some of that as well, and I have a certain degree of sympathy with the people within the SEO community that are doing some, you know, essentially good content strategy type work. That they're having to combat these idiots that are, you know, stinging people for a huge amount of money to do tweaks that are only going to piss off Google, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't approach, you know, a search ranking. I think a lot of companies like to approach, you know, Google search ranking pages like it's a high street. It's not a high street. You know, and ultimately, you know, if we exist in a world where everyone does all of this stuff perfectly, everyone's website is perfect, everyone's copy is amazing, so on and so forth, then, you know, potentially there's kind of a ceiling on where you can be.
Yeah.
Because factors like, you know, how long your domain has existed and you know, things like this would become more and more of a significant factor. My suspicion is it won't, because the way that Google, you know, does its ranking will just change. You know, they made big changes over the last 2 years to try and eradicate, you know, the kind of spammy sort of results that you get and just focus in on quality.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's had some big changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I don't think at this point in time, it's, you know, if you're building a website, SEO is not something you need to be concerned with up front.
Ooh, that'll get you in trouble with the SEO community.
That'll upset. I'm not saying don't be concerned about it. Be concerned with building a decent website with good copy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, you know, if your ranking is terrible, you can kind of go from there. But websites that are built to try and rank well look like websites that are built to try and rank well.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Oftentimes, you know, you've got a great ranking website that people don't like using. Well, that's not easy to say. A great ranking website.
You nearly messed that up.
I did, didn't I? Nearly some need for some editing. But the website itself reads terribly and people don't like using it.
Yeah.
You know, a great, you know, ranked number one on Google and having NAFL conversions is no good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thank you so much, Jez, for coming on the show. That was some really good, sensible, down-to-earth advice there, and it was just great to talk to you. And yeah, we should hook up for not for coffee.
Something else.
Yeah, something else before too long.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks, Jez.
Nice speaking to you.
All right, so that was Jez. Very interesting conversation. I particularly loved his point about resisting the urge to continually redesign, that as designers we love to design and as developers we love to develop, and so we have to resist that urge and only need do what needs doing rather than fiddling endlessly.
Jez was king of the witty remark, really, wasn't he?
He was.
or the wise words, I think, would be the better way of saying it.
I
like the point he was making about basically we have lots to say about the things we love, but no one else cares, basically.
Yeah, that was another good one as well. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, he did have a lot of that kind of thing. I mean, it must be amazingly hard, I think, to be the only web designer developer in the organisation. I mean, I know from the looks of it, they give him quite a lot of latitude.
Yeah, so I think he just gets on with it and...
Yeah.
Is supported. I think that's the difference, isn't it? If you're supported and people trust you to do a job, then it's okay. It's half the time you've probably got people that don't trust you to do the job, and then they interfere and they make the wrong decisions and all that kind of thing, and then it's a nightmare.
Yeah. I think it's how he stays up to date with everything. I mean, I know we kind of touched on that a little bit in the show, but I do find that quite remarkable, because what enables me to stay up to date a lot of the time is other people at Headscape. You know, it's people that, you know, I see Dan has been fiddling with some new technique, or Ed has, and I can just kind of copy what they do, if that makes sense, learn from them. And you kind of learn from one another. But when you're by yourself, that's quite a hard thing to do. So I'm pretty impressed that he manages to do that, to be honest. I like the way he picked new technology as well, that he didn't rush into every new thing that came along, but, you know, kind of picked and choose what to do. You know, his decisions about responsive design were very good. But, I mean, what... He must have a huge knowledge across a huge range of subjects, mustn't he? Being the only guy. I mean, you know, in that conversation alone, we touched on design, development, we touched on content, which he seems to end up responsible for half the time, SEO, all of these different things, which I think is quite remarkable, really. I've got to say, I think Oak is very lucky to have him.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say that's, you kind of cover all those things as well, don't you? But that, he's probably, no offence, Jez, but I don't expect he's the youngest, and I expect he's just over the years accumulated all these things.
Yeah.
Which you do.
It still impresses me. I think Jez is cool. Anyway, enough talk, enough buttering up our featured person of the week. Let's move on and talk about Featured Project, because it's Popcorn Horror, which I love. Daniel Sudden, I think that's how he says his name. And it's popcornhorror.com, and it's a bit of a disaster, really. which Daniel submitted it precisely because it's a bit of a disaster. It's not terrible by any means. I've seen many worse, and I think... The design does its job. So it's a website aimed at horror aficionados, basically. You know, so films, art, you know, horror writing, all that kind of stuff.
Sorry, I'm looking at pictures of pets dressed as Freddy Krueger.
How can that not be a good thing? You know, it's quite funny, actually. I'm now looking at it as well. Anyway, so Daniel was responsible for designing this website, okay, and it did okay. I mean, it doubled the traffic on the original website, but it kind of failed in its broader goals, really, and it didn't succeed particularly well. And I won't tell you, go through everything Daniel wrote about the problems with the sites, but it came down to three things that kind of caught my interest and I thought were worth sharing. Right. First of all, they outsourced the development to I don't know who, but it was outsourced to another person, a third party. I get the feeling it was outsourced abroad somewhere. And they seemed to overpromise. So they said that they would do a lot of things and then failed to deliver on it. So that was one problem they faced. They also had pretty poor communication. So the designer and the developer and the client, I don't think, communicated with one another very well, and it was a little bit fragmented. And then, which, you know, you read Daniel's interpretation of this, and you think, oh, yeah, typical designer blaming everybody else but himself. But he then goes on and talks about actually how his research was somewhat inadequate as well, and that he misunderstood the audience to some extent, that he didn't spend enough time doing research that he should have. And then the final thing that he commented on, which I think was quite interesting, was that he was only involved with the beginning part of the project and kind of stepped back quite early on, and that he felt was part of the problem. I mean, all of it basically came out of the fact that it was an inadequate budget for what they were trying to do.
Often the way, and yeah. I mean, we've all been guilty of going, well, we'll just, if everything goes perfectly, then it's not an inadequate budget, but nothing ever goes perfectly, and then people start cutting corners, or you know, just not as much time is spent on things as it should be.
Yeah, so not enough time was spent on research. The designer, they ran out of, you know, they didn't have the budget for the designer to be involved the whole way through. They outsourced cheap developers, you know, elsewhere, etc., etc. So I thought it was really interesting. And I think there are certain lessons that we can learn from it, which I think are worth touching on before we kind of wrap up for today. And those basically were, make sure your designer and developer are working closely together throughout. That I think it can happen either way. It can happen this way round, like it did with Daniel, where The designer was involved at the beginning alongside the developer, and then the designer stepped back and the developer continued on. But I've seen it the other way around as well, where the designer is involved at the beginning of the project but the developer isn't, mm-hmm. and the developer comes in later, and that can be equally damaging because the designer is committed to all these kinds of things that the developer can't deliver. So really, you do need the designer and the developer working hand in hand the whole way through the project. And I think hand in hand is an important aspect in that as well. That I think it really helps if the designers and developers know one another. I'm not saying it can't be done, because we do it quite regularly, actually, where we don't know the developers particularly well. But I think to get the best results, I think it's so much more helpful if they do know one another. So, yeah, it's quite an interesting issue, that one. The other thing the other lesson I think we can learn is that it's really important to carefully document what was agreed.
Yeah, definitely. That's what sounds like what went wrong here.
You know, the developer said he would do stuff, but it was probably said over the phone or whatever, and there was no written record of it. There needs to be a written record of everything, you know, and it can feel... The trouble is it can feel like it's a lack of trust, you know. Oh, I want it written down because I don't trust you. And it can feel as well like, oh, this just slows stuff up because you have to write everything down. But I just, it's not always a trust issue. Sometimes it can be a misunderstanding issue. The number of times, you know, I've been on phone calls where I've had one interpretation of what was said and they've had another. And, and we've caught that because after the call, Pete or you, Marcus, or someone else will write out all the things that were agreed and sent that through to the client.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it even more slightly wider than that, it's just really important to have somebody who's managing the project. It might not necessarily be a separate person, but they need to be thinking along. They need to have a project management hat at least, and do all the note taking and double checking and ensuring that people are doing what they need to be doing when it was agreed that they would, and all that kind of stuff. Very important for things to run smoothly.
Absolutely. And for that person to know that that is their responsibility. Yes. You know, I think in any scenario, that's sometimes my trouble with bad implementation of things like Agile. Mm. You know, because Agile is perceived as this very kind of democratic process where everybody just does their job. But you still need somebody, and proper Agile recognises this, you need somebody to, you know, to hold it all together, to be that kind of central point. Mm. It's a very important role. And yet, for some reason, I don't think project managers get a lot of respect in our community. Within the web design community, I think we all foo-hoo project managers, and we really shouldn't, because they're absolutely the cornerstone of delivering successful websites, in my opinion.
Well, I think there's this view, isn't it, that you become a project manager when you lose the ability to design or code or something like that,
yeah.
Which is actually not the case, really. It's a case of, you know, once you're grown up enough to be able to be trusted with looking after whether something's delivered or not, then... Yeah, that's when you get offered those kind of jobs, and that's why probably people get paid quite well for doing that job. It's about basically dealing with shit. Same with anything else. You normally get paid the big bucks for having to deal with all the crap.
But I'm not. Well, there are two points I want to challenge you over there, Marcus.
Was I sounding a little bit something there? I don't know.
one was the assumption there that a designer and developer isn't grown up enough to be a project manager.
Some aren't.
I will accept that. Are you thinking of anyone in Headscape? I hope not.
I'm not saying anything.
Actually, you're talking about me, aren't you? No, I've just worked it out. So that's one aspect here. The other thing is, I'm not convinced they are paid the big bucks.
They can be. It's seen as a senior role, and what I'm saying is that's right, because you have to...
You deal with a lot of shit.
And then that's putting it in a kind of like a bad way. You have a lot of responsibility. basically. Yeah. And you're the one who gets, you know, the finger pointed at big time if things slip or, you know, or they just kind of fail from an organisational point of view. It's down to you to deliver. That's the whole point of having a project manager.
And it's you that gets shouted at by the client.
And you're hated internally as well.
Yeah, you really are screwed from both ends, aren't you?
Hence that's why my big bucks there. Comment. It's like it's deserved.
They should be paid the big bucks, whether or not they are.
Yeah.
Right, and then the final thing that it almost goes without saying, but it doesn't go without saying because in this particular case it got shortcut. And it often does. If budgets are tight, the first thing to go is the research, is the getting to know the audience. And that's what backfired on these guys, that they didn't know the audience as well as they thought they did, and that came back to bite them. And it's funny how we always cut that kind of thing. We always cut the usability testing. We always cut the research. Yet, you know, you take such an enormous risk because... You know, if you get that wrong, the whole project fails. You know, it's not like dropping a little bit of functionality from the site where the site would then still work. You are undermining the fundamentals of the site. So it's quite interesting, that one. So there you go. I really appreciate Daniel submitting this as a site for us to look at, because it's quite hard to submit one that you're a little bit ashamed of, really. You know, you want to show off your best work to the world. And I really appreciate Daniel actually showing us off his failures and why it failed. We ought to do that. I think we ought to find a project that we feel has failed and maybe cover that one week. And if anyone else has got any that they would like to feature, any reasons why they feel that a project particularly failed, you can submit them at boagworld.com/featured-projects. You can submit good sites as well that you're pleased with, but it's interesting every now and again to look at one that failed. So it's good.
Yeah.
All right, Marcus, what's your joke for the week?
Well, I was just saying, obviously, we could enter a site that we felt wasn't that successful, but I can't think of any.
Oh, come on. You're such a bloody salesman. I can think of one. I can think of a Magento e-commerce site that turned into hell on earth. I can think of one where we had to walk away from the client right at the very beginning when we first started out, within a few weeks of us starting out.
Yeah.
So there are quite a few.
That was my first joke, Paul.
Oh, was that a joke?
It wasn't, well...
I didn't realise that. I thought you were being a salesman.
No, I wasn't. I've got a couple of...
So that joke was about the same quality as your normal ones, then?
Yeah, and as are these. From Ian Lasky, actually. I've moved away from Nick Johnson Hill, although I probably will return to Nick Johnson Hill.
I'm really sorry, Ian. You've been a long-term supplier of jokes to this podcast, and we appreciate your commitment, but Nick has been kicking your ass with his jokes.
It continues, although these are ones he's just found on Twitter. But anyway, here we go. So I would love to make another chemistry joke, but all the good ones are gone.
Are gone. See, that's terrible.
Waiter, why are you putting bricks around my lettuce, apples, celery, and walnuts? Well, you did ask for the walled off salad.
That would have been quite good if you hadn't screwed up the punchline.
Oh dear! Yes, there we go.
So yeah, now Ian, you seem to have found Marcus's level, so that's good.
The walled off salad.
Walled off salad.
Oh dear,
that is very good.
Yeah,
Marcus, I presume you're always open to new jokes.
Always, please send
them. So that's, what is it, marcus@boagworld.com, I think, works.
It does, yeah.
So that's good. Send him jokes at that. He's always pleased to hear from new people. Mm-hmm. Maybe a quality joke. In fact, I tell you what, send him a joke where you tell the joke. You record it as an audio file.
We have done that before. I think we've had one or two.
Because I think that will get around your terrible delivery.
Yes. Well, but I have to do it really badly. That's
part of the charm, is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, if I told them well, people wouldn't think it was me.
Well, even Jez said, you know, that we have to keep your jokes.
Everybody thinks that, apart from the people that don't.
Anyway, right, that's another week done. I'm off to jet set around the world, and we will be back next week where I will be knackered and incoherent.
And no one cares.
Nobody cares about my well-being. No. Sad, really. Listen, we ought to just fade to me whinging now. It's just going on about how hard my life is. And, you know, having to go to award ceremonies and fly around the world and things like that.